in any negotiation, presumably, the outcome is going to be that he will give in somewhat and we will give in somewhat if they get an agreement.
More trade tariffs may be on the way. It's Monday, June 10th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Hong Kong residents protest in the streets. The health impact of natural disasters. Poor air quality means poor health. Australian penguins and a new look at old fossils. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. Treasury Chief Steven Mnuchin said Sunday that President Donald Trump would be perfectly happy to tax more imports from China if the U.S. leader cannot reach a trade deal with Chinese President Xi Jinping when they meet later this month. Mnuchin told CNBC, "We made enormous progress. I think we had a deal that was almost 90% done." He added China wanted to go backwards on certain things, something Beijing has denied. The U.S. Treasury Secretary then said, "We stopped negotiating." VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Alan Deardorff, professor of international economics and public policy at the University of Michigan. He asked Deardorff if he believed that such a threat to place tariffs on more Chinese imports would push Xi Jinping, the Chinese leader, to capitulate to U.S. demands.
Trump obviously believes it. Trump has had, he thinks, or will say, some success using tariffs to press leaders of other countries to make concessions that they didn't want to make. Now, it's clear that Xi Jinping doesn't want to make all of the concessions that we are asking of him. And in any negotiation, presumably, the outcome is going to be that he will give in somewhat and we will give in somewhat if they get an agreement. But it's going to be kind of hidden from view whether how much he gives in. Almost certainly, if they do get a deal, Trump will say he capitulated. And Xi Jinping will say, no, he did not. But that's the way these things go. So how much he will actually do, I have no idea. There were some things, certainly, that we were asking of China that they knew were in their interest to do, things like doing a better job with intellectual property and that sort of thing. But I presume they've already made those promises. So the promises that they are said by the U.S. to be backtracking on presumably have more to do with subsidies to state-owned enterprises. I don't think they want to weaken their state-owned enterprises. But if they can find a way to satisfy us while not unduly weakening them, then I think they will do it.
How much room on either side, or both sides for that matter, are they willing to compromise and to move closer to each other?
From what I understand, on our dealings with Mexico, Trump insists that he got a deal from them, that they gave in to what he was demanding. And therefore, he's saying this is a success for him. But at least the New York Times is saying most of what they gave him, they had given him earlier. So I'm not sure there needs to be a real gap. It's just a matter of spinning whatever they come up with and claiming that it is a win. And my guess is he'll be able to do that with China as well. The problem is, it is absolutely true that Trump loves using tariffs more than probably anybody else in our government, except maybe Mr. Peter Navarro. And so it is true that he will go ahead with the tariffs if he can't at least claim to have a victory here.
The threat comes as the G20 finance ministers have been meeting in Japan. And they came out with a communique that said trade and geopolitical conflicts are risking global economic growth. But at the U.S. insistence, dropped a call to recognize the pressing need to resolve trade tensions. What could this kind of relationship lead to in the ongoing international trade between the United States and its Asian allies?
Well, we haven't done much with any of the other Asian allies, or any of the other Asian countries in particular, with Japan. We are negotiating a free trade agreement with them, and as usual, I think pushing them for things that they might be not willing to do and so forth. But I don't see any sign yet that we're going to do things that will be harmful to the other Asian economies than China. Indeed, they stand to some extent to benefit if we put tariffs on China. So at least some products will move and some manufacturing will move to those other countries.
Well, if there is no agreement between the U.S. and China, how does that hurt the rest of the world, especially if the same tariffs remain the same or are increased?
Well, if we just put tariffs on China or add to the tariffs we've already got on China, there's a mixture of effects, but the net effect on other countries is probably positive, because they will stand to be able to replace China in exporting to the United States, and for them, they're in exporting to China, because China will be retaliating against us. If we put tariffs on them, they're for sure, because they've done before, but going to put more tariffs on us. So that channels a lot of the existing trade between, or what was the existing trade between the U.S. and China, through other countries. And the other countries that are most likely to get that trade are going to be in Asia. So it will be disruptive, but I would say probably beneficial to those other countries.
Alan Deardorff, professor of international economics and economic and public policy at the University of Michigan. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit online at voanews.com. U.S. Treasury chief says Trump is perfectly happy to tax more Chinese imports. Protesters fill Hong Kong streets over proposed extradition law. China creates system to protect its technology. With Mexico deal done, U.S. urges China to resume trade talks. Cargo of North Korean coal adrift near Vietnam. Expanded coverage of all these stories and much more can be found, of course, on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hundreds of thousands of Hong Kongers from all ages and walks of life marched Sunday against a legislative bill that would allow people to be extradited to mainland China to face charges in the largest demonstration that city has seen in years. Protesters carried banners condemning the proposed law, which would modify Hong Kong's Fugitive Offenders Ordinance. Critics say China's legal system would not guarantee the same rights to defendants as they would have in semi-autonomous Hong Kong. Civil Human Rights Front, the protest organizer, estimated the crowd to be more than 1 million, while Hong Kong police said peak participation saw 240,000 people in the streets. Unlike Hong Kong's attendees of regular protests on July 1st and October 1st, the anniversary of reunification with China and China's National Day, many protesters on Sunday said they rarely attend demonstrations. Many said they felt the ordinance was a sign that Beijing was infringing on 50 years of autonomy promised to Hong Kong, a former British colony. An amendment to the Fugitive Offenders Ordinance was introduced in April. It's set to be voted on June 12th by the Legislative Council, whose majority is held by pro-established legislators. If passed, it would allow the city to extradite suspected criminals to other jurisdictions where it lacks a permanent extradition agreement, including China and Taiwan, on a case-by-case basis. Chief Executive Carrie Lam has previously said that such changes would close legal loopholes. The bill follows a high-profile murder case last year where a Hong Kong man murdered his pregnant girlfriend on holiday in Taiwan. The government has said that speed in the case is necessary as the murder suspect, who is serving a prison sentence on related money laundering charges, could be released as early as October. The changes, however, and the speed at which they've been introduced have raised international concern about the future of Hong Kong's legal system and its global reputation. Our thanks to Aaron Hale in Hong Kong for contributing this story. Happening now in Asia, India Prime Minister Narendra Modi paid homage to the victims of the deadly Easter suicide attacks by Islamist militants in Colombo as he called for global efforts to tackle the threat of terrorism during a visit to two tiny Indian Ocean countries, the Maldives and Sri Lanka. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're starting out a brand new week on VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us. Natural disasters happen all over the world, and Asia experiences a large number of events each year. The physical damage can be extensive, deaths often result, but for survivors, the mental scars can last a lifetime. The 2019 Atlantic hurricane season is officially underway here in the United States, and yet many people have not recovered from some of last year's storms. Meanwhile, tornadoes have torn up swaths of several U.S. states in the past few weeks amid damaging floods. All of this has a psychological toll, as VOA's Carol Pearson reports.
Across the U.S. and elsewhere, too, tornadoes, flooding, and fires have destroyed homes, sometimes entire communities. Preston Black in Oklahoma says a tornado threw his trailer home several meters into the air. His parents, wife, and children were all inside. Then he saw his wife in the debris.
It was awful, the worst thing I could ever see.
She survived, but they lost everything they had. Hurricane Michael destroyed entire towns in Florida last October. Some people are still living in tents. Janelle Crosby lives in a trailer home full of health hazards.
Cats, critters, it's disgusting. Mold, this they put up to try to keep the mold. You can see how pink is now black.
Natural disasters affect everyone differently. In California, Gwen Osh found the immediate impact of loss can't always be anticipated.
I didn't realize how much my home means to me.
Dr. John Lauriello, a psychiatrist at the University of Missouri Healthcare, says when an entire community is hit by disaster, there's more support than when an individual suffers a tragedy.
I think there's a shared understanding of the trauma, which I think can be very, very helpful because people feel like it wasn't just them who it occurred to their community, and therefore the community is going to work together and the rebuilding will happen together. So it's a big difference between having a single house fire and having multiple homes destroyed in a tornado.
In Missouri, universities are housing people whose homes were destroyed by a tornado and massive flooding. Daryl Bonner says he's grateful.
It's a blessing living here. It's a lot of financial burden have been, let loose a little bit. There's hope, there's people out there that's willing to help,
Crosby says in her Florida community, people share whatever they have.
We just all take care of each other. It's hard, but like I said earlier, if one of us have generator gas, we all have a fan or, if we have propane, then we all get to cook that night. If not, we get out here and make fires in the grill and cook or... But we're surviving, and I feel like it's going to get easier, but I feel like it's going to take a while.
Psychiatrist Lane Young Walker at the University of Missouri Healthcare says the sooner parents can get their children back into a normal routine, the better off they will be.
So when a natural disaster like this happens and they get displaced, they're not in their home anymore, their school is closed, they're not able to go to the school, they don't have that structure, they don't have that routine and that consistency, and it can cause a lot of stress for them.
If schools are destroyed, Young Walker suggests finding ways for children to do classwork.
Can you give me an antonym for the word gradually?
Last year, a teacher turned her California home into a classroom when her student's school was destroyed by fire. 8-year-old Eleanor Wettig thought it was better than...
I love it. It's, more comfortable than our classroom. The chairs are cushy. That's one thing that I like. And anyway, it's a house, so it's, more fancy and stuff. And she cooks us great lunches. Every lunch I love.
Californian Gwen Osh credits community support with helping people who had lost their homes during the wildfires.
It's almost like a therapy thing, We're all in the same place and dealing with the same thing. So, and we're talking about the people who lost their homes and and how sad it is. And but you know what? We're resilient.
Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Coming up, a new view of our air. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news from VOA Asia, a vessel loaded with $3 million worth of North Korean coal is now floating off of Vietnam's coast, searching for a place to dock. The Dong Than, a Vietnamese-owned sailing vessel under a Panamanian flag, wandered the international waters off of Malaysia and Indonesia for 2 months. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, one of the ways astronomers learn about planets beyond Earth is by studying our own. And their satellites doing just that, monitoring the Earth's health and our own. VOA's Kevin Enix takes a deep breath as he tells us more.
Satellites orbiting the Earth can see some awe-inspiring sights, but they can also see some more disturbing things, like deadly levels of air pollution.
According to the World Health Organization, adverse air quality is responsible of 7 million premature deaths on a global scale. In Europe, the European Environment Agency is estimated to 400,000 to 500,000 premature deaths occurring. So this is a very real problem.
Over the past two decades, Europeans have launched a series of satellites to collect reliable data on how bad pollution levels are and where that pollution is coming from.
Now, with the Copernicus mission, Sentinel-5 precursor, we have global coverage within 1 day and very good spatial resolution, 7 times 3.5 kilometers. And this allows for the first time to use the space-based measurements to be implemented in operational services for air quality monitoring, but also for forecasting.
The satellites are collecting data on everything from harmful nitrogen dioxide levels from car exhaust to levels of dust and aerosols that warm the planet with amazing accuracy.
The TROPOMI instrument is really a big step forward in what we can do. That's for different reasons. I think maybe the most striking thing when you look at the data is the very good spatial resolution. So it can measure with a ground resolution of about 3.5 by 7 kilometers, which is more than a factor of 10 better than what previous instruments had.
That level of detail is allowing researchers to help lawmakers pinpoint where the pollution is coming from and create policies to deal with the harmful pollution. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
This news break from VOA Asia, China is creating a system to protect its technology, according to state media, as the U.S. restricts the access of Chinese companies to American technology in a spiraling trade dispute. The People's Daily newspaper said the system will build a strong firewall. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a colony of little penguins on a remote island near Sydney are moving into a new, specially designed bunkers to ensure their survival after a brush fire wiped out their habitat last year. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Little penguins are just that, about 35 centimetres tall and 1 kilogram in weight when fully grown. In Sydney, Australia's biggest city, there are just 2 remaining colonies. One in the seaside suburb of Manly is endangered because of hunting by foxes and development, while the other on Lion Island, an 8-hectare outpost in the city's north, is struggling following a bushfire that destroyed much of the island in 2018. To help the population recover, wildlife rangers have installed 20 concrete burrows on Lion Island. They are fireproof and protect the penguins from predators such as foxes and goannas. Rachel Labada is from the New South Wales National Parks and Wildlife Service.
There's a nice curve in the burrow, so that stops predators coming in, so no goannas or cats or dogs can fit around it. The birds are coming onto the island and what we call prospecting, looking for their places to mate and then lay their eggs. So we're hoping in a month or two we'll come on the island and these will be occupied by birds on eggs. It'll be perfect.
The little penguin is the only species of penguin that breeds on the Australian mainland. These small creatures are found along the southern coasts of Australia. Originally, they were fairly common on the Australian mainland, but now their colonies are generally restricted to offshore islands. Wildlife officials say that if the concrete shelters on Lion Island are successful, there are plans to install more in other places where fires and predators threaten the penguins. The ocean is the little penguin's natural environment. Their wings have evolved into flippers that help them to swim gracefully underwater, where they feed on small fish, squid and krill. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
A remarkable fossils exhibition has just opened at the Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History here in Washington. Located in the newly restored Fossil Hall, it contains over 700 fossils, including dinosaurs, plants, and insects going back billions of years. But as we hear from VOA's Deborah Block, among these ancient remains is an underlying message about the future and the importance of protecting the Earth.
It was a bad day 70 million years ago for this Triceratops. Its remains are displayed beneath a fossilized Tyrannosaurus rex skeleton, posed as if it were still alive and ready for dinner.
We now know dinosaurs to be very lively animals. They were fast-growing. We know that birds descended from dinosaurs. Many dinosaurs that you see in a museum didn't necessarily live together. Each species lasted a million years or so, and then another species and another species. So many different dinosaur ecosystems in the world, just like there's many different ecosystems in the world today.
The new Deep Time exhibit is all about ancient life on Earth and how its climate, ecosystems, and geology evolved over 3.7 billion years. A fossilized palm tree unearthed in the Arctic shows that area used to be tropical. The tiny ancestor of today's horses lived 52 million years ago. The ancient world was filled with reptiles, insects, and mollusks.
We really explain and let you explore for yourself what the meaning is in something that might have happened 55 million years ago. They tell us a lot about the impact we're having now, because it's not just a past story, it's our story right now.
The objects on display illustrate how much the Earth has changed, affected by shifts in climate. Scientists say 66 million years ago, the impact of a huge asteroid modified the environment so much that the dinosaurs and most other forms of life couldn't survive. But today, the exhibition points out, humans are the culprit that are causing devastating environmental problems.
It's a scientific fact, and there's evidence showing that we are having an impact on this planet that's unprecedented. It's unprecedented in the scale, it's unprecedented in the rate, and it's unprecedented that it's one singular species causing all of these changes.
There's lots of very specific things you can do to ameliorate the impacts of climate change, to decrease climate change, to help preserve species and habitats. I mean, there's a lot of things in the world that are happening today that don't have to be happening.
Star hopes visiting the exhibition will encourage people to act.
I think we can really change the world with this exhibition. And I know that sounds idealistic, but I think we can. What I would really like is to see people getting connected to this story of the impact that we're having on the planet today, and to really wake up and see our impact and start making smart choices. Start looking at the things that people are doing around the world to direct our planet towards a hopeful, positive future.
Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. You'll find us on the radio. Many great radio stations around Asia carry our program, just like Falcon Radio at Adamson University in the Philippines. We thank everyone there who's taken the time to tune in and listen to our program. We invite you back again tomorrow, as long as everybody else as well. We also like to thank our director Tracy Carter and engineer Zainab Abdel-Rahman, our managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day.